Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
It's a podcast where we talk about things we like, that's good, that we're into. Now let's break that down. What is podcast? Thank you for asking that. It's radio on demand. You get it on your iPod by plugging it into an Ethernet port.
You know, our listeners come to us for definitions of words, and I appreciate that you're starting with one that is the thing they're listening to.
A lot of the time, though, when I explain to a family like what a podcast is, they don't know. And so
it's such an embarrassing word.
It really is. I'm so glad that you've finally broke the seal on this.
I still refuse to say that I do it when I meet people.
That is true. Rachel is so clandestine about this endeavor. And it's not that you're embarrassed.
A little. If I'm honest.
Is it just the word? If it was called something else, online telebroadcast.
Oh, I don't know. I think creating anything original is a little embarrassing.
That's an incredible sentiment for you to share on this show.
I don't know. I don't know if there's anything you could call it that would make me talk about it proudly.
Here on Wonderful, we are enthusiasts about lots of different things. But if you ask us to make anything, that is so cringe.
So cringe.
I think for me, it is the pod part of it. Because I think the etymology of that is from an iPod. And I don't like... Clink, clink. What's that sound? It's the brand cuffs that now I've got on. People say, so you're an Apple employee. And I say... Yes, I am. Maybe a Zune cast. Can we get that going? Something a little bit more...
An MP3 program.
I'm an M3... I'm a comedy programmer.
There's no way to do it.
It's just not a good way. I've been workshopping it for nigh on 14 years now.
There will be times when you and I have performed together on a stage, but when I come home and people ask what I have done, I will say, my husband did a show.
That's something that you personally, I feel like, need to
I know.
Unpack.
I got to figure that out.
Do you have any small wonders for the audience to hear now?
I'm going to say chocolate-covered raisins.
Yeah. Again, you're not going to say raisinettes because of the brand cuffs, but...
I like raisins. I mean, period. I used to get them in my lunch in the little boxes, and I used to eat them happily. I like a raisin.
Yeah.
Put chocolate on it. Now, all of a sudden, it's okay for everybody, and I can admit it.
The jammer we like to munch on when we are feeling particularly naughty is raisinettes and some popcorn, and you can get them both in your mouth at the same time. Every textural beat one could ask of food is delivered in this crunchy, chewy, chocolatey.
This is something
treat.
You introduced to me. Do you remember how you found it?
No. Accident? Was it a happy accident?
Have you seen other people do this?
No. Oh, you're asking me? I thought you knew how I discovered this.
No.
No, I mean, it just makes sense, doesn't it? I probably did it. I mean, I did some stuff with popcorn while I was working at the movie theater in Huntington.
That's true.
Because they would let you take it all home, whatever didn't get sold. Instead of just throwing it away, you could take home whatever you wanted, which me, I lived around the corner from the movie theater, so I'd just get a big, clean garbage bag, fill it with popcorn, take it home. Sometimes we'd dump like a whole bottle of Nutella in there, shake it on up, and get pretty high. That part.
That's so sloppy. How would you eat it?
Yeah. You don't want to know. Isn't it better to have plausible deniability in your mind about the kind of
I'm
going to
picture you with a bowl and a spoon like ice cream.
That's exactly right. I definitely didn't eat it out of the garbage bag with my hands like a bear having the best day of his fucking life.
What's your small wonder?
I mean, look, I'm not proud of it. But we have dipped into Love is Blind season 6 on Netflix. I will say that show left me out in the cold last season. Did not enjoy it. It was a clusterfuck for so many reasons. I think by the time like they got out of the like honeymoon phase, there were only two couples remaining. Yeah. And that ain't good. That ain't good TV no matter what.
I feel like scientists should study this show because every season we start it, I'm like, this show is weird. The premise is crazy. Yeah. I don't like it. I don't understand it. And then I will have watched three episodes and I will be hungrily into the fourth. Like, what happened in between me now and me then?
It's such a rich vein. I feel this way about The Circle, which I believe is coming back next month. And I'm very much looking forward to of all the like Netflix reality like shows that that they make. I feel like The Circle is the sort of purest form of what I
like. Well, it's like a game. It's a game.
It is a game, which I do enjoy. But there is something about talking to someone without being able to see them and the like tremendous amount of, I don't know, imagined social cues that come out of that, that is like infinitely fascinating. And for The Circle, like that's it. That's the whole kit and caboodle. Love is Blind, obviously, like you mix in the romance dating side of things
and
into that.
It's such a demonstration of like projection too.
Yeah.
This idea that you can talk to somebody for a little bit and you can envision this perfect match for yourself.
Right.
Based on these conversations. Like it's unreal.
I'm not feeling confident about the hit rate of this season so far. We're about three or four episodes in. Not sure that I've seen sparks fly that could be a testament to a long-lasting, beautiful love.
I just had a little headline come up when I was scrolling that suggested there is a contestant on there that actually is in a relationship already.
Uh-oh.
Prior to visiting.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if it's true or not.
But yeah, we've been enjoying that. Survivor comes back this week. Our cup is about to runneth o'er in a way that I am very much looking forward to. I go first this week.
Okay.
I got Minesweeper. I'm going to do Minesweeper
this week. I would love to talk to you about this.
Yeah, Rachel caught me playing Minesweeper on my phone over the weekend.
It was a big board, y'all.
Okay. I mean, not that big. I guess it's all like a matter of perspective, but it, you know, it's like a 12 by 24. I play, you know, portrait mode, and so I like to have a tall board. Something like 48, 50 mines in there or something like that.
Maybe there's like a secret or like tips and tricks that you were going to reveal to me and I'm going to understand how people do it better.
Do Minesweeper better?
Because I feel like there is a certain point in every game, usually pretty early on for me, where I'm just guessing.
Just like fuck it and click around. I hope you, when you take out one of them big chunks with one click, that feels really, really good. Sometimes I'll just like quick restart until I can get a big nasty chunk that I can then build off of. If you kind of grew up in the era that we did where there was sort of like the proliferation of like personal computers, certainly that had like started by the time I was born, but you didn't get like Windows in every home until, you know, I was a child already. And I'm not sure if you sort of had the same thing. I know your grandma was very, very much into computers, but like you guys had a PC at home growing up, right?
Yeah.
I feel like folks of our era have a certain fondness for all of the like freeware games that were included with certain versions of Windows. Like I could go on and on about 3D pinball for Windows, Space Cadet. That's one.
Yeah,
that's the title of one game, or Jez Ball or Ski Free. And in fact, I may still do those as individual segments. But today I'm going to talk about Minesweeper, which is very much in the sort of like OG set of Microsoft games. Minesweeper, if you've never played it, it is a numerical puzzle game where you're presented with a large grid of blank tiles, some of which are secretly mines that if you click on them, you get a game over instantly. If you click on a safe tile, one of a couple things can happen. Either it will show you a number, and that number illustrates how many of the eight adjacent tiles surrounding that tile contain mines. Or if it isn't touching any mines, it'll show up as empty, and then it will automatically open up the nearest tiles until it, you know, reaches numbers. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much the whole game. You click around, you check the numbers, and you try to deduce which of the adjacent tiles to that number contain mines. And once you've revealed like every safe tile, the game is won. I used to play it when I was a child, very much in the like click, oh, one, this must be a good spot for me to just explore and settle down. And I'm going to click all around that. Or click five. No fucking way. I'm getting out of here, man. I don't want to be anywhere near the five zone. And that was, I don't think I ever won Minesweeper like once even in my life, unless you like set the board huge and you make it so that there's only five tiles, five mines in it. And then you click it and it just like instantly wins the game because it automatically opens it all up. My algorithm recently fed me a video about Minesweeper speedrunning, which should come as no surprise to you or anyone who listens to the show that that is the kind of, that's how my algorithms got
it's
me.
It's weird. Down. I've never gotten pushed that.
Yeah, it's so strange that our algorithms are so distinct. I saw that video. I thought, hey, I wonder if I can beat Minesweeper now. And the answer is yes, I can. The game, when you play it like, properly, when you meet Minesweeper on its terms, it really reminds me of Sudoku, where
the
things sort of lock into place and chain together in a way that is very methodical and very, very, very satisfying. So like you open up a few tiles until you figure out where the first mine is and you plant a flag on it and you go, okay, well, that mine is touching a one tile, which means that that one tile's like one mine is spoken for. All the other tiles touching that one are safe. So you click through that until you can go, okay, ooh, that opened up another one tile that's touching that mine. So let's clear around that. Oh, that opened up a two tile. Well, this is the only other free tile, so there must be a mine there. And then you just keep on going and going and going and going until the whole board is clear. Sometimes you'll lock yourself into a situation where there's like two blank tiles left and you have no clue as to which one is going to be the mine and which one is safe. And you just kind of have to flip a coin and guess, which is always frustrating to lose a game to that. But it works in a manner that is very much logical and very, very satisfying to kind of creep through and complete. And I don't know, I have found that it fits into, you know, a few minutes of my day where I don't have much else to do. I just got Minesweeper on my phone. I can crack it open, see if I can do, you know, a board that's a little bit bigger or a board with a few more bombs in it. And I've been really kind of enjoying it. It is scratching a real itch for me in a way that is not like, I don't know, not the most challenging game in the world because you're just kind of like working off of numbers. But it's very, very rewarding when you get a big board clear. So Minesweeper first gained acclaim after it was released as part of the Microsoft Entertainment Pack 1 in 1990. When Windows first came out, it didn't have like a bunch of bundled games. You had to buy these entertainment packs, each of which would contain like seven or eight games.
Yeah.
And later they would sort of pick the best ones from those and include them in future editions. Like Minesweeper from Windows 3.1 on was just included with each Windows install. Like Ski Free was in these entertainment packs, Jez Ball, a lot of the stuff that I've already mentioned. And so like if you sat down at a computer that had Windows on it at a certain point, you knew at the very least, this computer can do Minesweeper and it can do Free Cell. Do all of these different sorts of games that were just sort of like bog standard included with Windows.
Yeah.
Which was always very exciting. Like my mom was a secretary at the church that we grew up going to. And there were days where I would just kind of be stuck at the church with her until she was like done doing whatever she was doing and we could go home. And I could just sit at one of the computers in one of the offices. You know, I could sit at the minister of music's computer if he wasn't working, sit down, bust open some Ski Free and just go for it. Play some Minesweeper. And that was always really, I don't know, nice to have that kind of consistency in my life. Minesweeper was preceded by a game called Mind Out, which came out in 1983 for the ZX Spectrum, which was a very, very proto sort of PC machine. Kurt Johnson was the creator of Microsoft Minesweeper, and he admitted that Minesweeper was inspired by another very similar title, but that it wasn't Mind Out for the ZX Spectrum, and that he didn't remember the name of the game that inspired it. So the history of Minesweeper is a bit mysterious. You would think you would remember that if you developed an entire fucking game based on another game. You would remember the name of that game. A lot of versions of Minesweeper that have been released like this century have substituted mines for like flowers due to the fact that landmines are pretty horrific and responsible for some atrocities to this day. In fact, when you Google Minesweeper, it generates like a playable version in Google that is much more floral in nature. Yeah. I'm glad that I returned to Minesweeper because it is genuinely a fun and surprisingly sort of chill game that I can kind of slot into my day. But it is also nice going back to this, like, you know, unconquerable beast from my childhood and kind of realizing like, oh, there's a path through this. There are rules to this that can be understood and sort of, you know, mastered. And I don't know, that is cool to be able to have something from my childhood like that I'm able to sort of revisit and enjoy.
Yeah.
I think you would be good at Minesweeper.
I can see, like, and in the same way that I like to do Sudoku on a plane, you know, like, I could see myself choosing it if I am...
If you have nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. If you are stuck at your mom's church computer with
if I have, like, no books, I can't watch anything.
Right.
I can't listen to anything.
Yeah.
Then maybe Minesweeper.
Yeah. That's the tagline.
That's the tagline.
If there's nothing else, maybe Minesweeper? Can I steal you away?
Yes.
We all got needs. And to satisfy those needs, we subscribe to different services to fulfill those needs. Some of them are pretty dang good at it, if I do say so myself. But then you put away your childish things. You say, I don't have a need for a string cheese subscription service.
I keep receiving this huge box of string cheese every month and immediately throwing it away.
Yeah.
Maybe I should not receive this huge box of string cheese every month.
But you forget, don't you? So easily.
I know.
Your many subscriptions you've scattered, like Johnny Appleseed to his apple seeds. Well, Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I've used Rocket Money before, and it found, not a joke, maybe 6 things that I had completely forgotten about. Like, maybe about $50 a month worth of shit that I just completely did not know, nor did I interface with the things that I was subscribing to.
Yeah, it's like that. We got that one app that promised to show us hockey and then almost entirely stopped showing us hockey.
Yep. And Rocket Money was like, you're not watching the hockey anymore. The Blues lost and not in the playoffs. Anyway. Rocket Money is fantastic, and we recommend using it if you think you might have some of those phantom subs. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful. Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike, and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie. And it just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's electricebikes.com.
I'm Emily Fleming.
And I'm Jordan Morris.
We're real comedy writers.
And real friends.
And real fucking cheapskates.
We say, why subscribe to expensive streaming services when you can stream tons of insane movies online for free?
As long as you're fine with 25 randomly inserted super loud car insurance commercials.
On our new podcast, Free With Ads, we review streaming movies from the darkest corner of the internet's bargain bin.
From the good to the weird. geared to the holy shit, look at Jean-Claude Van Damme's big old butt.
Free with Ads, a free podcast about free movies that's worth the price of admission.
Every Tuesday on MaximumFun.org or your favorite pod spot.
Hello, everyone out there. Thank you for coming to our service.
Yes.
We are ready to heal you. We are Ross and Carrie. We are faith healers. Yes,
yes,
you there.
Sir, you have a spirit of...
not listening to enough podcasts.
We have the solution for that.
Oh, we can cure you.
You should listen to Oh No, Ross and Carrie. Hallelujah. Mm. It's on Maximum Fun.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, you there. Gladys.
A spirit of boredom?
Oh my goodness, we have the solution for you. It is to listen to the podcast,
Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
What you got?
I have a trip to the Poetry Corner.
I was so hoping. He kind of went away. He was running down a tunnel as he was singing the song.
He's got places to be.
He's busy.
Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, I didn't warn him that the Poetry Corner was coming.
That's true. So he's got to warm up the instrument.
It was like, I have a pre-existing appointment.
You're right.
I'll give you 5 seconds and then I literally have to run out the door. The poet I am going to talk about this week is David Hernandez. If you Google David Hernandez poet, you will realize there are multiple poets named David Hernandez.
That's amazing.
Perhaps unsurprisingly, as it is a very common name next to a very common name.
Right.
But the David Hernandez I am talking about this week was born in 1971 and lives in California. That should hopefully narrow it down.
Google 1971 California David Hernandez poet and you're going to get where you need to go.
So David Hernandez, currently alive teaching creative writing at California State University, Long Beach. He is married to a writer, Lisa Glatt, and he has several collections of poetry, as well as some young adult fiction.
Oh, cool.
Which looks really good, but I am here to talk about...
This isn't the young adult fiction corner. You got plenty of other choices for shows to go to. This is the poems one.
Yeah. He has a bunch of collections of poetry. The most recent one just came out in March 2022 called Hello, I Must Be Going, Poems. Did you get that reference?
Yes, but I don't know from what.
I don't know if this is the reference. I haven't read an interview, but... it's a Groucho Marx song from a Marx Brothers movie.
Then that's probably why I get it. Through osmosis. Uh-huh. It might be genetic from my dad that I understand that reference.
And I wanted to read one of his poems. This poem is called All American. It is from his poetry book, Dear Sincerely, which came out in 2016. I'm this tiny, this statuesque, and everywhere in between. And everywhere in between, bony and overweight. My shadow cannot hold one shape in Omaha and Tuscaloosa and Aberdeen. My skin is mocha brown, two shades darker than taupe. Your question is racist, nutmeg, beige. I'm not offended by your question at all. Penis or vagina, yes and yes, gay or straight, both boxes. Bi, not bi, who cares? Stop fixating on my sex life. Jesus never leveled his eye to a bedroom's keyhole. I go to church in Tempe, in Waco, the one with the exquisite stained glass, the one with a white spire like the tip of a Klansman's hood. Churches creep me out. I never step inside one. Never utter hymns. Sundays, I hide my flesh with camouflage and hunt. I don't hunt, but wish every deer wore a bulletproof vest and fired back. It's cinnamon, my skin. It's more sandstone than any color I know. I voted for Obama, McCain, Nader. I was too apathetic to vote, too lazy to walk one block, two blocks to the voting booth. For or against a woman's right to choose? Yes, for and against. For waterboarding, for strapping detainees with snorkels and diving masks, against burning fossil fuels. Let's punish all those smokestacks for eating the ozone, bring the wrecking balls, but build more smokestacks. We need jobs here in Harrisburg, here in Kalamazoo. Against gun control, for cotton bullets, for constructing a better fence along the border, let's raise concrete towards the sky. Why does it need all that space to begin with? For creating holes in the fence, adding ladders, they're not here to steal work from us. No one dreams of crab walking for hours across a lettuce field so someone could order the Caesar salad. No one dreams of sliding a squeegee down the cloud-mirrored windows of a high-rise, but some of us do it. Some of us sell flowers. Some of us cut hair. Some of us carefully steer a mower around the cemetery grounds. Some of us paint houses. Some of us monitor the power grid. Some of us ring you up while some of us crisscross a parking lot to gather the shopping carts into one long, rolling, clamorous, and glittering backbone.
Jesus.
A lot of stuff in there.
There's a lot of really, really good. I honestly, my mind kind of like went blank after Jesus never leveled his eye to a bedroom keyhole. Like that hit me so fucking right. And my brain was like, let's sit with that. And then you kept saying dope stuff. And I was like, wait, I gotta keep on rolling.
Yeah, I feel like this poem should be in a time capsule.
No kidding.
Like it is such a good representation of like the time that we are living in now.
Well, what's wild is you said the book came out in 2016. Was that pre-election 2016 or post-election 2016?
I don't know.
I guess 2016, like before shit got so bad, like was already such a like wild and disillusioning and exhausting year just with the election cycle that we were in. And I think that it feels like that poem speaks to a lot of that kind of like...
Came out March 2016.
Okay. That feeling of like wild disenfranchisement that came from that whole year really, I don't know. Obviously, it speaks to an experience that I do not, that I have not lived. But it is wild to me that poem came out in the year that it did.
Yeah, I like listy poems, sure. You know, especially if they're exploring a lot in that list, which I think is exactly what he's doing.
Right.
I feel like it's a big task to undertake to write a poem called All American and to try and cover a lot of ground and do it in a way that feels unique. And that's exactly what he did with that poem. I found an interview with him from 2017. It's an interview that was in The Rumpus, and it's talking to him right after or shortly after that book, Dear Sincerely, came out that the poem is from. And he said, David Hernandez said, my poems are partially autobiographical. To put a percentage on it, 57.4%. Honestly, it depends from poem to poem. Some are more informed by events in my life, while others are less so. Here's the thing. When I'm writing a poem that's based on an experience from memory, I don't feel beholden to the facts. That's the job of journalists. I'm more concerned about conveying an emotional truth with making art through language. If the poem's telling me, look, I know you had bananas this morning in your cereal, but blueberries is sonically more interesting, I'm going with blueberries.
That's really good.
I feel like that's like a nice, a nice touch point when you think about the poem I just read of just like his willingness to just double down on this idea that he is both sides, he is everything, he is
right.
And.
Yeah.
And to feel okay about that, even though like as a country, we are so strongly divided on a lot of those things he talked about.
Yeah, of course.
David Hernandez, a poet I just found. I'm excited that he has so many collections.
Yeah.
Wanted to share them.
Well, thank you. It's always a delight to be in the corner. I actually left my keys here last time.
And you just found them.
I just found them, yeah. So great. It's been a couple months.
Now you can finally leave the poetry house.
That's true. Yeah, I tried. I have been captive here for a while.
Does that make sense? Would there be a poetry corner in a poetry house?
No.
What would the house be?
The house is love.
Oh.
The house is us. Can I tell you what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes.
Got one here from Miss B from NKC, who says, my small wonder is my students trying to read Romeo and Juliet with as many accents as they can try. Cowboy Tybalt is my favorite. That is very, very
That's
good.
That's fantastic.
I got another one here from Will, who says, my small wonder is when Rachel mentions anything from our hometown of Webster Groves. I graduated in 2005, around the same age as Griffin. Yep, exactly the same, it sounds like. So I usually recognize her ultra-local references. I had Dane Williams as a band teacher at Steger, which no longer exists, and as a guitar teacher at the high school. I haven't been able to go to any live shows, but any general STL culture is great, too.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for reading that one to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2005, we wouldn't have crossed paths at any point.
No.
But you obviously would have had pretty much the exact same experience I did.
It sounds like it.
That's cool.
Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for these for theme song Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Max Fun Drive is coming up very soon in March. We have some exciting stuff to share with you later on.
Yes, I can't wait.
I genuinely am so stoked for this Max Fun Drive. We have done some truly wild BOCO for you this year, and I cannot wait to talk more about it. We have some merch over at macroymerch.com, and it's almost March, which means we're going to be deploying even more new merch there. So check it out now. We got a Sometimes It Rains in Trap Nation shirt that I adore. Some Fungalore stuff up in there too. And again, more coming down the pipe. That's it for this week's episode of Wonderful. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Wonderful, and we hope you'll join us for next week's
this
episode.
This was an episode that we created that was called Wonderful.
And now it's, as we say in the podcasting business, in the can.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.